Consequence Podcast Network. Welcome to Going There, the crossroads where music and mental health meet. This season of Going There is brought to you by Johnson & Johnson, who believes that health is everything. Their strength in healthcare innovation empowers them to build a world where complex diseases are prevented, treated, and cured, where treatments are smarter and less invasive, and solutions are personal. Through their expertise in innovative medicine and medtech, they are uniquely positioned to innovate across the full spectrum of healthcare solutions today to deliver the breakthroughs of tomorrow and profoundly impact health for humanity. Learn more at www.jnj.com, at Janssen US, and at JNJINNOVMED on Twitter. This season of Going There is also brought to you by AbbVie, who is driving the pursuit of better mental health. Over the last 30 years, AbbVie's scientists and clinicians have worked to tackle the complexity of mental illness, and today offer a portfolio of medicines and a pipeline of innovation that spans depression, anxiety, bipolar 1 disorder, and schizophrenia. To learn more about AbbVie's work to support individuals throughout their mental health journey, please visit www.abbvie.com or follow at AbbVie on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, and LinkedIn. And also, this episode of Going There is brought to you by Alkermes. Alkermes is a global biopharmaceutical company developing innovative medicines in the field of neuroscience with products that treat alcohol dependence, opioid dependence, schizophrenia, and bipolar 1 disorder. To learn more, please visit Alkermes' website at www.alkermes.com or follow at Alkermes on Twitter and LinkedIn. Today, we are talking with singer-songwriter Marcus King. You may know Marcus from his hit singles Wild Flowers and Wine and The Well. His music has been described as emotionally laced, deeply soulful, and moving and affecting. Marcus has a new album out called Mood Swings with the lead single by the same name. He also just started an international tour that includes some shows as part of Chris Stapleton's All-American Roadshow. So check out all of Marcus's tour info, merch, and music at marcuskingofficial.com. Now on the Going There podcast, we have the tough conversations to address important issues so we can learn from each other, challenge the stigma of mental illness, and get the care we need. And one of the most difficult issues we face on our mental health journey is something Marcus discussed, which is what he described as terrible hopelessness. Now, in an ideal world, when we start experiencing symptoms of mental illness, such as depression or anxiety, we would fully understand our struggle. We would know exactly what diagnosis we have, what symptoms to expect, the causes of our symptoms, and the best treatments to improve our mental health. And everyone around us, our mental health providers, family, and friends would all be on the same page about what we are facing and what needs to be done. And even in this ideal scenario, managing mental illness can be a very difficult and painful experience, leaving us feeling hopeless about our future. But unfortunately, most of us don't even have this ideal scenario. We may not know what we struggle with or how the symptoms may affect our lives. We are unsure of what caused the symptoms, and we are unclear as to the best treatment approaches. And the people in our lives may not only misunderstand what we are going through, but also stigmatize our symptoms, criticizing and blaming us for our struggles. And so we often feel an even deeper sense of hopelessness as to how we will live a long, healthy, and happy life. Will we ever understand what we're dealing with? Will we ever get better? Will people understand and support us? And to this end, Marcus talks about how he has coped with his feeling of terrible hopelessness as he has struggled with bipolar disorder. In particular, he discusses how he has tried to develop a language around his mental illness so that he can describe what he is feeling both to himself and others. This allows him to have more agency and to better understand and express his struggle. And he does so in our conversation as he describes the ups and downs he faces with bipolar disorder. It has also helped fuel his creativity on the new album, including on songs like Mood Swings and Bipolar Love. And Marcus discusses how developing this language around mental illness has allowed him to run the show with his mental health and feel that he's constantly developing a tool belt of coping strategies on his mental health journey. Now, as we progress through this season of Going There, our goal is to bring you, the audience, further into the conversation. We'd love to hear your feedback, questions you have that have been sparked by our conversations with these incredible artists, and topics you'd love to see addressed. If you enjoy the show, please leave us a review wherever you get your podcasts. These help other folks find their way into the conversation so they can go there with us. So let's go there and listen to what Marcus King has to say. Hey, Marcus, welcome to Going There.
Hey, thanks for having me.
All right, so let's start off with one of your songs that you think best represents your mental health journey.
I think this whole record really is, you know, it's meant to be just a good insight into a time and a period in my life. But if I were to pick one off the whole record, I mean, you know, really the title track, Mood Swings, kind of sums it up. And it kind of tells the tale of being in a relationship and having these drastic changes in mood and all that being based around like self-medicating and, you know, trial and error with different mood stabilizing drugs and also like, you know, poor attachment styles and trying to achieve some mindfulness through like past traumatic events and trying to divulge your love language and your attachment style and all this and that. I mean, there's so many variables that go into a relationship, and Mood Swings is just kind of about that.
You know, so one line that a couple of lines together that I really appreciated from that, the concept of terrible hopelessness and then the idea that I can be myself, because I think that one of the things that not only leads to terrible hopelessness is the idea that we can't be ourselves, but there's also a fear that when we have terrible hopelessness, nobody will get it. And so if we could just sort of take us through that part, like when you talk about terrible hopelessness, what contributes to that or what does that mean for you?
So I'd written the song and I wrote the song quite a while ago. I mean, this record took like 2.5 years, maybe even a little longer just through scheduling, but also it felt pretty divine. It took as long as it did because that was all part of the process and part of the growth and part of the, you know, self-awareness that I needed to kind of dive into some of this material. But Mood Swings is one of the songs that kind of started it all off. What I'm saying in that is like, I can feel like I can really be myself around you, which is basically kind of saying like, I can be my depressed self around you because you won't judge me. And it sounds more positive than it really is. It's I can really be myself around you, which is not great for you. It's not great for our relationship, but I feel safe around you. And it's kind of this duality of that safety net that you have in a partner of wanting to serve them as a partner, but also feeling comfortable enough to be unhappy around them. So it's kind of speaking to that. And I spent a lot of hours when Rick and I were working at his place out in Italy. I spent a lot of time researching, because I kind of came to this idea, like, I'm a mental patient. A lot of us are mental patients. It's just a lot different now than it used to be. I'm not in an institution or in a straitjacket, not institutionalized, but I am a mental patient technically because I'm medicated by a psychiatric professional, right? So if you start thinking about it in those terms, so I wanted to find like intake interviews from people who were considered like crazy or whatever you want to say. Because at a time, you know, when psychiatric help wasn't as readily available as it is today, you know. And anyway, I found this documentary called The Faces of Depression and was really taken with this interview from it and the way this gentleman describes depression and the hopelessness that's associated with it. I just really fell in love with that, and we put it at the beginning of the song, which ended up being the beginning of the album and the title of the album. So it was a really important moment. You know, this being my first time working with Rick on a record directly, we had some samples on the record, and you have to wait for samples to clear, right? And I'd never experienced that before because I'd never really worked with anyone who had been in the hip-hop field or even adjacently, really. But that's the one sample we couldn't get cleared, and I was really kind of distraught about it. And we tried some other solutions. Eventually, I just said, what's the holdup? And long story short, the son of the physician who conducted all that research, he's in charge of the estate, and he said that it was for educational purposes and not for entertainment, and he didn't want it used like for entertainment purposes. So I wrote him a letter explaining the advocacy for mental health awareness that this record aimed to kind of achieve, and he granted us the access to use it, which I'm really, really grateful for, because it is really impactful when you hear it, and It could not be recreated. It's really heavy.
You know, one of the things that I want to try to put together is that, you know, it's interesting that the title, The Faces of Depression, because mm-hmm. I think that one of the things that sometimes people have as a misconception is that depression looks the same and feels the same in everyone. And you talked about, I think the term was my depressed self. I hope I'm getting that right. But what does depression feel like for you when you get into that space?
It's kind of fickle, really, because obviously it does have a lot of different faces, and sometimes it can look like nothing's wrong. And that's the really problematic part of it, that, you know, it's just like a body of water, and you can't really see beneath the surface. So it's calm on the surface, but underneath there's any number of things that could be going on. But for me, it's kind of it's an interesting relationship, because it's sometimes when I feel the most inspired to create or to write, but some days it's like the opposite of that. So it is kind of ever-changing, ever-evolving, and I think especially now we've kind of received this funhouse image of depression, or even like OCD or ADHD or any number of these like kind of problems that people may struggle with, or not struggle with, rather. But we get this funhouse idea of all these things, and you know, it does have a lot of different faces, like you said.
I think one of the things that it could be really tough about that, you know, in addition to all the difficulties that we have with depression to begin with, is that we don't necessarily know what's happening, and other people don't know what's happening. And so there's a lot of opportunities, unfortunately, for either us to be unempathic towards ourselves, or for others to lack empathy for us, because it's not like a definite thing when people have a headache or something like that. That tends to look, not always the same, but it tends to look relatively the same for people. I think that I'm kind of curious to see whether you felt like, especially in the context of saying, like, I can be myself around you, have there been times where you just either you're not sure what's happening, or you're trying to explain to other people and they're just not getting it, and it leads to those unempathic moments?
Oh, man, entirely. It just leads to, and you know, you kind of get into this mode too, where you find the wrong therapist. It's really indicative of like being in a relationship, right? Because you find somebody who you've explained everything to, and all right, they kind of get it. And you just don't want to go through that process again, because that takes like two or three sessions with somebody, and you're like, I don't really enjoy this person's energy, but I don't want to start fresh again. I don't want to have to find someone else I feel I can trust and be myself around. And I think for a long time, like a lot of us, I didn't really have the diction or the vocabulary to kind of explain what was going on inside my head. Like, I remember telling my dad when I was a kid, like, I'm afraid that I've already died, and now I'm living some kind of an afterlife, and I'm not aware that I'm already died, that I'm already deceased, and that I'm living some kind of afterlife. How do I prove that wrong? And he's like, whoa, I don't know, man. You know, let's go to church.
What I hear you saying, you tell me if this feels right, is that there's almost this disconnection we can have with ourselves, where it's like, some people call it depersonalization or derealization, where you're sitting there and you're kind of like, I'm here. I know I'm here, but there's, I personally feel like this is one of the reasons why The Walking Dead is so appealing to people, or as a concept, is that there's a lot of people when they struggle with their mental health issues, they almost feel like, it's like, am I alive? Am I dead? Like, whatever this is, it doesn't feel right. You know, now I'm stuck with trying to explain what's going on. I feel like that's one explanation. Like, did I die and this is the afterlife?
Right. And that was as a kid too, like, I'd always have these like crazy panic moments. Like, I always thought maybe I am like kind of like losing it, like mentally. Maybe I'm like slipping into some kind of psychotic state. That was always a real fear of mine. Or, I mean, sometimes I still feel like that. And I just kind of come to the realization that it's okay not to be okay. And that's something that I really achieved somewhat recently in working with Rick. Even like, Rick's like, it's your writing partner. Why would you want to, you know, abandon your writing partner? Just learn to embrace it and use it and channel it.
Yeah, it's such an interesting way of thinking about it, because, you know, one of the things that we've talked about on the podcast before is that we often don't have a healthy relationship with what our body and our minds are trying to tell us. You know, so it's often, it comes across as something of an argument rather than a conversation. Mm-hmm. You know, it's sort of like, you know, we feel badly and we're kind of like angry that we don't feel good, and we have thoughts that are uncomfortable and we don't want to listen to them, and we're kind of mad at that part of our experience. Then we become mad at ourselves, become mad at people around us for not getting it. And it sounds like what Rick is sort of talking about through the lens of songwriting is this idea of, well, what if that's the beginning of a conversation you're having with yourself? What if that's the beginning of something that's valuable in some way, even if it's uncomfortable, maybe particularly because it's uncomfortable?
Yeah, and comfortability is obviously very important to us as a human race, and it is uncomfortable, but you have to make those moments in the day, and I feel like mindfulness has kind of become a luxury in some people's purview, and, you know, it's easier to have the perspective of, like, I mean, I get it. Like, who the hell's got time to meditate? I got work to do. So, you know, you got to find those moments, like 10 minutes a day, and then just find a time to look within and just see what's going on. And, you know, like I tell my dad's 71, and, you know, I think he's going to therapy for the first time soon. You know, I'm sure he's okay with me sharing that, but it's just not something that we've all really, because like you alluded to earlier, like, it's not on the surface. It's not a broken limb. It's not something that we can readily go to a physician and say, it's broken, fix it. It's a lot more complex than that. And you got to take the time and you got to put the effort in to feeling better. And it is uncomfortable, like you said, but looking within is really important to me.
And one of the things, I'm kind of curious your thoughts on this, because I think it definitely relates to songwriting to an extent. One of the things I'll tell people is you need to be able to go down into the deepest, darkest parts of yourself in order to feel understood. And if at any point you're not willing to do that, doesn't mean you have to do that all the time, but in general, that there's not time and space for that, that you could lose connection with yourself because you're not listening to yourself. But at the same time, you also have to be able to try to get to as good of a place as possible. And for those two things to not be related. In other words, like, one of the things that can happen sometimes for people is if things are going well and then they struggle, someone will be like, well, things are going so well. Why are you, like, depressed now? Or why are you anxious now? Or why do you have to bring that up now? And if things aren't going well, it's almost like, well, I don't want to have any enjoyment because I'm afraid that that'll derail people realizing, or even myself realizing, that there's a problem. And so the idea of, like, keeping those two things separate but powerful, to me, is a very important part of our mental health journey. And I feel like songwriting, to an extent, can often be both of those things linked together to some degree.
That's such a true statement. It is perceived that way. I know artists who aren't with us anymore because they kind of achieved what they were striving towards, and you get there and you realize you're still empty, and that's a terrible feeling. It's something that I've experienced, and other people I know who are still with us have experienced it, and people that I turn to and confide in and speak to. And that's really what my efforts are now, is just to the people who I've spoke to or confided in about my mental health and my journey, and I'm just trying to do that openly and publicly, have a dialogue with my fans and with other musicians to try to advocate. But anyway, what I'm getting at, it is, it's a lonely feeling when you realize you've achieved what you were trying to accomplish in order to feel something, and then you still feel empty. Where do you go from there? There's always an option, and there's always the ability to figure it out. You know, it's not actual hopelessness. It is if you don't want to share it with anyone.
And emptiness, hopelessness, and loneliness, those three together, I feel like, tend to play off of each other a lot. And I don't think, for people who don't feel emptiness, or they don't know that they feel emptiness, could you describe what that feels like? Like, what's kind of unique about emptiness?
And that's the other thing too, is I feel like there's this innate, like, assumption, and I do it in all sorts of things. Like, there's this assumption that everyone is kind of on the same wavelength, and I'm trying to be more available to over-explaining, over-communicating. You know, after the demise of my previous relationship, I am an over-communicator, and I like to handle things right in the open. And, you know, I find out things, like, through podcasts or through whatever, like, you know, some people don't have an inner dialogue even, and that's such a foreign concept to me, but some people may not understand, like, what emptiness feels like. So when they hear you talking about it, they just sound like, or they may even get the idea that you're just ungrateful, or that you're a crybaby or something. And I think that's kind of the fear, and maybe part of the reason people don't open up about their emotions more readily. But emptiness to me just feels like, and I remember when I was young too, like one of my first girlfriends, I wrote a song. It was called Love is Emptiness. And I never did anything with it, but you know, she was really hurt by it because she's like, well, I thought things were going pretty well. And I just didn't have the wherewithal to be able to explain with her that, you know, things are going well. That's why I feel comfortable to write something like this and be vulnerable with you and share it with you. And I was really confused by that. Emptiness is really difficult to explain, but it's important that we try to unpack it so people have a clearer understanding that it's not ungratefulness. But, and I'm kind of dodging the question because I don't really understand how to define it. But, you know, I know it when I see it.
Yeah, the ungratefulness, I think, is a really good pathway. At least I know when I feel empty, it leads to that sense of lack of gratitude, because it's sort of like, okay, there's something that people think from the outside is going to register with me. You know, like there's people around who love you, or you're doing something fun, or you got something that you wanted, you know, something that it makes sense, but it only makes sense if you're filled up, like that landing concept. It's like, it's only if there's earth there, you know what I mean? It can't land if it just keeps falling and there's nothing there. And it's sort of like, you know, it's just like throwing something and it just never, you know, it's like floating in space for a second. And it has this feeling of, okay, someone else is going to think that this should feel good. And I know it could feel good at a different time, but I am not feeling it now. And so that to me is where that gratitude deficit can sometimes happen, because it's like, I want so badly to be grateful for this because I want so badly to feel it, but I don't. And now that I know that I don't, and you're expecting me to, I'm even more self-conscious about it. And now I'm spinning in my head, and people are just kind of like, man, like, what's your problem? Like, how come you can't be here in this moment? It's just like, I don't even know what this moment is to me, right? I know it's different from what you seem to be feeling, you know, and that makes it even worse because then you feel isolated. So now it's like, oh shit, I started out with like a nice time. Now I'm empty. I'm ungrateful. I'm isolated. And now I start to get hopeless, you know, because it's like, I don't even know what any of this means. That could all happen within 10 seconds, you know? And it's just like, man, I don't know what just happened. I just got smacked with something.
Yeah, man, that's so sound what you're saying. And it resonates with me. It really does. Truly it does. And, you know, part of my mindfulness journey is trying to, you know, express my gratitude during my meditations and my prayers. I try to just express what I'm grateful for before I try to before I try to manifest anything that I want. I think keeping that equal balance, and sometimes you got to remind yourself of all the things that you should be grateful for. And for me, that's allowed me to become more present and to be more grateful in the moment, because that's a hard one. It is difficult.
Yeah. What you're talking about, which I really appreciate, is the idea that gratitude or mindfulness, these things are practices. And like any other practice, there are some people, you know, to whom it comes more naturally, you know, or they, for whatever reason. And, you know, there's some people that are naturally better musicians or better singers, but the idea that you can practice and get better. And when thinking about that concept of emptiness, one of the things I'll try to think about is like, okay, like I might have to put in extra effort. I might not be as empty as I thought. I might just not be as well connected to myself. And I might have to put in extra effort to do that so that I'm always ready, accepting paradoxically that I may not feel it at the time. Like I may do all the mindfulness and gratitude and prayer that I want, but I may still feel empty. But at least I have more of a chance of connecting with that part of myself. And I think that's tough for people, because I still think that we all think that mental health is like the one thing that we just either have or we don't. It's like, man, this is the hardest thing to do. It requires the most upkeep, I'm sure there's other things that are equally, you know, physical health and there's all other things like that, but it's definitely something that just requires so much care and we just don't do it.
Yeah, I mean, you touched on it, man. You said it, like, I just left the gym. Like I have slow metabolism and I do intermittent fasting, and I work out every day. I do it religiously. It's like every morning, I try to sauna and I try to fit my prayers and meditations and manifestations and all that into these little blocks and windows, and I schedule out my day. And there's, you know, some people, like some of my bandmates who are 180 pounds, no matter what they do. They can eat whatever they want, as much as they want. They can eat a cheeseburger at 2 in the morning. They don't gain a pound. And some people are like that with their mental health. And, you know, it's supplemental, really. You just got to balance it out. And life is all about balance. And that's the go-to for me all the time. It's just balance it out, man, or else it's going to waver one way or the other.
You know, one of the things on this concept of balance is that if we don't have that balance and we just have that pain and we wind up blaming ourselves for the pain, there's something, and tell me if I have this correctly, on Fuck My Life Up Again. You said, I don't deserve to live without pain.
Mm-hmm.
That concept is a place that a lot of us can get into where on the one hand, we're always like struggling to feel better, but there's that part of us, maybe small, maybe big, that's like, is this, not only is this just me, but like you said, do I deserve this? Because I'm looking for explanations as to why this is happening, and deserve certainly sounds like a reasonable option. You know, like I must have done something. I must have done something in a past life, in this life, to somebody else. I'm just not doing what I'm supposed to be doing. So how do you get to that place where it's like, I don't deserve to live without pain? Because that's a rough one to navigate once it's in your head.
It is. That's why I was only really, there's a couple songs on the record that I wasn't able to write until it was more in a retrospective exercise. Some songs I wasn't able to write in the moment because I didn't have the awareness or the understanding of why that's not all right. And I felt like that for a long time. I don't deserve to live without pain, because in any religion that you practice is like, there's the concept of paying for something you did before, whether it's in this life or a past life, you're going to pay for what you did. So there's that understanding, and there's so many rationales that you come to, I feel, at least for me, there's all these rational explanations that you come to in your mind before the idea of actually saying, well, no, I do deserve to be happy. That's the last thing you come to for whatever reason, at least it was for me.
My number one album, big shocker to me, also Folklore.
Whoa.
Are you ready to dive into all things Taylor Swift?
Good for a Weekend is the ultimate podcast for any Swiftie.
With new episodes dropping bi-monthly, as well as bonus episodes to give you real-time reactions to the latest rumors and news, it's your one-stop shop for all things T-Swift.
We also love connecting with our fellow Weekenders, so be sure to connect with us on Instagram, Twitter, and or Discord to share all your Taylor thoughts.
Good for a Weekend is available wherever you get your podcasts.
I know.
Folklore just is that. Like, it's a perfect album.
Hey, it's Kyle Meredith, host of the Kyle Meredith With podcast, presented by WFPK at WFPK.org and the Consequence Podcast Network. It's a series that puts the spotlight on iconic musicians and actors, inviting them to drop by and talk about their latest projects, whether it's albums, TV shows, films, or beyond.
I'm going to say something I don't want to say. Here it goes. Without Spinal Tap, there is no Tenacious D.
Whoa. Man. We get great stories and the biggest scoops from people like Garbage's Shirley Manson, the 1975's Matty Healy, Jack Black and Kyle Gass of Tenacious D, Maya Hawke, Kiefer Sutherland, and everyone in between. New episodes arrive every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, so it's a great way to keep up with your favorite artists and discover some new ones. You can find Kyle Meredith With on the Consequence Podcast Network or wherever you get your podcasts.
If you feel okay with it, do you mind just kind of walking through how you got from one to the other? Because that's a powerful journey to go from I don't deserve to I do deserve. And was there anything in particular along the way that really clicked for you?
It's just part of my daily ritual, because it's just like trying to lose weight or keeping weight off. It's a daily grind. It's a daily ritual. And just like I have some days where I don't make it to the gym, or I don't intermittent fast as long as I'd like to, or I eat something that I know is going to make my joints feel inflamed or make me not feel that great because it had a lot of dairy in it and I don't eat a lot of dairy or whatever it is, I know that my stomach's going to hurt or something, you know, I'm going to have heartburn. Some days I'm just depressed and I just wallow in it, like a lot of us have those days where we're just like, yeah, my screen time on my phone's going to be insane. I'm going to lay in bed, I'm going to watch some junk TV, and I'm not going to grow at all. And you just kind of wallow in it. And I think it's okay to have those days where you kind of revel in it. And the journey for me is all about just like daily gratitude, you know, confirming these things that I do have in my life that bring me joy, whether I realize it or not. and just trying to manifest the joy that people provide to me, because it's all out there, and I'm really thankful for it. So that's kind of my journey.
Yeah, and I just want to touch on something that you said, because, man, I think it's getting more attention now, but inflammation is such a powerful issue and process when it comes to our mental health. And I think just now, because if you look at it, you know, inflammation is a constructive process that we use to fight off infection, you know? And so if we're in inflammation, it's a coordinated attempt with our immune system, but it mimics depression. Your energy's low. You're sleeping all the time. You're not necessarily eating as much. You don't have much energy. You know, you don't really want to do things. And that's all designed to get you to kind of settle in and heal. And I think that one of the things that can happen is there's so many things that we have in our lives that might trigger inflammation that we don't even realize, whether it's our food, drinking, substances, high levels of stress, you know, that can all trigger that feeling. And our body sometimes doesn't know, oh, like, am I depressed? Is this inflammation? Is there even a difference? Because I personally think that in some cases, just like you said, that it would be good if when we were feeling depressed, we saw it as an opportunity to heal, as an opportunity to rest, you know? And I think that's where there's a link with inflammation. Like I've always kind of wondered, like, is the inflammatory process with depression kind of a similar thing where it's like, hey, something's going on that you need to rest about or heal from? And we don't tend to look at it that way. You know, we think we should fight it, but we don't fight when we have a cold or a flu or we're quote unquote sick. I mean, some people do, but.
Well, I mean, it all kind of just compounds on itself. Like, you know, my parents, like their generation, like they've got a hookup for a antibiotic. Like anytime they get even a little bit of a cold, like they're just taking antibiotics, and that's not good for you to keep doing that. And not routinely anyway. And it's all supplemental. And that's a thought that I tend to resonate on a lot is, you know, I know people who say like, oh, I wouldn't want to rely on medication. I wouldn't want to have to take a medication every day. I'm like, well, it's not really medication if it's just supplementing an imbalance in your brain. It's just the same reason that I take turmeric or the same reason that some people may take B12. It's because their body's running low on it. And the same way, like, you know, if someone's hungover, when I used to drink and I'd wake up and I was hungover, I'd be running low on dopamine or what have you. And I would eat food to release dopamine, or I would want to engage in sexual activities with my girlfriend to release dopamine. And it all just ends up making you feel even more low. It's all just supplemental, but the idea of all that is almost like conspiratory in a way. It's like you got to talk about it or hear about it on a podcast rather than just hearing it from your doctor, because like they say, man, like, you know, follow or go to the one who stands to benefit from it the most, right?
Yeah, and I think one of the things you're talking about, and I really like the idea, and I'd really encourage people to kind of think about, it's like, look, you're running the show with your mental health. It's not like if you take a medication, all of a sudden that's just going to take over and either solve anything, or, you know, you're still going to be in a situation where you're weighing a whole list of possibilities, from taking medication to exercise to mindfulness to gratitude to doing more social things, all the things that different types of therapy, all the things that you're talking about. And I agree with you. I kind of encourage people to say, like, listen, this is just one more potential tool in the tool belt, and it may work, it may not, but to not give it the opportunity to work because you're thinking to yourself, well, I'll just rely on this. Number one, I mean, if it works and you feel better, I don't know, is that the worst thing to rely on? But the other thing is, you're still going to have to do a lot of the work anyway. And sometimes the medication clears you up so that you can do that work. You know, you're more likely to be able to exercise. You're more likely to be able to eat healthy. You're more likely to be able to go to sleep on time. And so, you know, I agree with you. I think it's something that is just important to think about as one of all the things that you're doing in your, you know, mental health journey.
Yeah, I mean, it's the Yelp generation, the Amazon generation. Like, anything I want, it needs to be here in 2 days, or overnight would be even better. And if I'm unhappy because of something someone did to me, everyone's going to fucking know about it, because I'm going to write about it. I'm going to tell everyone how displeased I was with this service or that service. But we don't do that, or we don't have that afforded to us for our own actions to ourselves, right? We just deal with it, and we just kind of revel in the idea that this is what we deserve. So for me, like with my psychiatrist, I'm like, And that's the thing. It's like you have to do the research, like I said, like podcasts and like reading books and stuff, because your psychiatrist isn't going to tell you that microdosing psilocybin mushrooms can create the same receptors that the Cymbalta is creating receptors for the dopamine, because the dopamine kind of travels through your brain like this. It's like receptors and senders, right? And what's happening is they're blocked. So it's sending. The dopamine's still sending. It's just not receiving. So you're not getting it, and it just creates new receptors. And the psilocybin microdosing does the same thing. So I talked to him about, like, well, you know, let's talk about the benefits of microdosing and, you know, see if maybe I could start to implement that into my life and try to wane off of the prescription medication, right? And when I check in with him every few months, I'm like, well, you know, I'm still feeling a little depressed. I still have these days. And he's like, well, you know, we could try to implement some Wellbutrin, which is more of a mood enhancer, and the other drug is just a mood stabilizer. And I'm like, well, no, I don't want to enhance my mood. You know, I don't want to manufacture a good mood. So I'm just going to buckle down and try to exercise more and try to achieve it more through my diet and more through just like my mindfulness exercises, right? And do it the long way instead of trying to get the Amazon Prime of happiness, which is what I used to do when I self-medicated with drugs and alcohol, was I just wanted it, you know, it's my money and I want it now.
What I really like about what you're saying is this concept of an active relationship with not only your mental health, but as part of that, your mental health care providers. You know, mm-hmm. I think that the people who you go to, it's like you were saying earlier on, it's like, you know, look, you got to feel comfortable. You got to feel like you trust. You got to feel like if you're learning about things on the side and you're bringing it up, that it's an open space to talk about all the different ways that you can get better. And, you know, as much as the people who are in the mental health field are generally, you know, hopefully well-intentioned and are trying to, you know, they're human and they may not know everything. They may not, they have blind spots. They may have, you know, whether they know it or not, they may have their own agendas about what they think will work and don't. And that's not necessarily bad, but it is bad if we don't feel, as the people who are in charge of our own mental health, if we're not communicating around that. And if at some point it just doesn't feel like, look, we're not on the same wavelength, you know, it's tough. And so I like the idea of being an active participant, you know, in your own mental health journey, like you're saying, you know, even though sometimes it can be a little bit uncomfortable, you know, because you're sometimes, you know, confronting somebody that you're working with or challenging them on things can be tough. But I like the idea.
I mean, that's been a big part of my journey. It's been helpful to me.
One of the reasons why we want to talk with musicians about mental health is that when it comes to the idea of trust, when it comes to the idea of trying to connect, you know, music is one of the first places that many of us start to explore our feelings and start to think about coping with our feelings and start to trust that maybe the artist actually understands us. You know, how many people will feel like, look, there's nobody in the world that understands us except for somehow our favorite artist does, or when we listen to a certain song or an album, it somehow brings us to a better place. And so the question is for you is that, who were those artists or what were those songs or albums that for you were like, look, this was crucial to my mental health journey?
Wow. Man, I love this question. And what I love about it is that it's different for everybody. And I actually, yesterday, was having the discussion with a good friend of mine about, we were talking about Pig Robbins, who's a famous country pianist, and like how he's able to play these certain melodies. And it's almost like, so there's 12 notes, you know? And people just, you know, Pig Robbins and Bill Evans don't sound anything alike, but they're using these same 12 notes that have been afforded to all of us. And it's all about the emotion and the intention behind it. Intention is so important. And, you know, to answer your question more thoroughly, like, I remember around the time my grandmother passed away, I was really close with my grandmother, my Oma. I was on, I forget what it was, but some kind of mood stabilizer that just made me feel completely nothing. And I'd rather feel completely hopeless and depressed rather than feel nothing at all, because that was much scarier and a much darker place, just to feel completely robotic and to feel like nothing. Anyway, when I was in that place, when I finally got off that medication, I was kind of coming back into myself. I remember I was having dinner, my girlfriend at the time had cooked dinner and we were enjoying a meal, and this song came on, which was Ponto de Areia by Wayne Shorter and this Brazilian singer, and I just openly started weeping at the table. And it's just something about the song and that collection of notes and the intention behind them that just made me, it broke the seal that needed to be broke. And oftentimes music can do that for us. And that's a really sound example of a song for me that I turn to when I'm feeling hopeless or when I'm feeling sad or hell, when I'm feeling happy. It's just a beautiful song. And same could be said for like Naima by John Coltrane or My Foolish Heart, which is probably one of my favorite songs of all time. I have it tattooed on my chest. My Foolish Heart by the Bill Evans Trio, live at the Village Vanguard, because there's something particularly special about that one and the audience's participation in that one and within the band too. Brian Wilson's always a good turn for me. So like the Pet Sounds record, like I Just Wasn't Made for These Times, that's a good one. Or there's a song called, it's by Loving Spoonful, called Butchie's Tune. That's a really good one for me. I've got playlists of these.
God Only Knows, for some reason, really resonates with me. I couldn't even really tell you why. I think that's one of the things about those artists or those songs. Like you can kind of put it together. You know what I mean? It's kind of like when someone asks, like, why do you love your wife? It's like, I could give specific examples of positive qualities, but, you know, at the end of the day, like, I just do, you know, I can't really explain it. And I don't even know that I'd want to explain it, quite frankly. It's kind of like that with, right, with my favorite music. I could say, you know, why, you know, Pet Sounds certainly has enough, you know, sort of rational reasons, qualitative reasons why it's good, but there's just something otherworldly about it that just, you can't really put your finger on it. So it's just, I'm with you on that. So, hey, Marcus, thank you so much. This is so important that artists, prominent artists like yourself, step forward to talk about their journey, because it just makes people feel that much less stigmatized, that much more understood. And, you know, it's been wonderful to follow your career up until now. I wish you the best. I hope we get a chance to talk again.
Man, this was really so healing for me. Thank you for giving me a platform to speak, and thank you for what you do. This is really, really great. Bless you.
Thank you so much. So there it is. Marcus King and I talking about managing his feeling of terrible hopelessness and creating coping strategies to manage bipolar disorder. Now, there's so much that we can take away from the conversation with Marcus, but one of the things that I wanted to highlight was our discussion toward the end of the podcast, which was about his feeling of emptiness. Now, I want to distinguish emptiness from feelings of hopelessness, which we discussed at the outset of the podcast. Emptiness is that experience when we feel hollow, like there's nothing there. This can occur for a variety of reasons, including if we are depressed and can't connect with more positive feelings like happiness and fulfillment. That emptiness can lead us to feel the terrible hopelessness that Marcus described, where we simply can't envision any positive future. Now, one of the things that can be tricky for people with mental illness is that we can feel empty at many points in our life. For example, if we struggle with depression and have difficulty experiencing pleasure, we may feel empty during otherwise enjoyable times in our life. So whereas we may have enjoyed spending time with friends in the past, when we are depressed, we don't feel those positive emotions and we are left feeling empty. The same may be true for anxiety. If we have social anxiety and are afraid that we will panic in social situations, our anxiety may make it harder for us to feel good, and therefore we feel empty and disconnected. Also, cycles of addiction can leave us feeling empty when we are animated, leading up to and using a given substance, but then crash and feel empty afterwards. So there are many pathways by which we can feel that hollow sense of emptiness that can be so disturbing. So how do we deal with emptiness? Well, this is when we need to take a cue from Marcus and develop a language around our mental health. We need to recognize that feeling empty and managing our emptiness is an ongoing process and an important part of our mental health journey. So the first thing we need to do is validate our feeling of emptiness. Acknowledge that we feel empty and that it is okay. We need to accept that feeling empty is often part of our mental illness and try to not judge ourselves for feeling that way. Second, it is also important that when we can, we let people know that we may be struggling a bit. This helps people not take our feeling of emptiness personally and models for them that it is okay that we are not feeling as connected at a given point. Next, we can try to remember that emptiness may feel like an absolute, like we have absolutely no feeling or connection, but it is often more on a continuum, where we may feel a little something at different points. We can start to check in with ourselves to see if we feel anything at all at a given moment. Maybe we aren't feeling the intense happiness or connection we crave or can feel at times, but we may identify small ways that we may feel less empty or more connected to ourselves and others. These are then useful moments to reflect on in journaling, with close friends or family, or in therapy. And it helps us challenge all-or-none thinking around feeling empty. Finally, as we identify the ways we do feel connected, we can see whether we can structure our lives to allow us to build on those small moments when we feel less empty. So we can find the people, places, and things that increase the likelihood that we feel more connected as opposed to empty. And we can identify ways of talking to ourselves that keep the conversation going about the processes we need to use to connect with ourselves and others on our mental health journey. I want to thank Marcus King for this wonderful conversation. This season of Going There is brought to you by Johnson & Johnson, who believe that health is everything. Their strength in healthcare innovation empowers them to build a world where complex diseases are prevented, treated, and cured, where treatments are smarter and less invasive, and solutions are personal. Through their expertise in innovative medicine and med tech, they are uniquely positioned to innovate across the full spectrum of healthcare solutions today to deliver the breakthroughs of tomorrow and profoundly impact health for humanity. Learn more at www.jnj.com, at Janssen US, and at JNJINNOVMED on Twitter. This season of Going There is also brought to you by AbbVie, who is driving the pursuit of better mental health. Over the last 30 years, AbbVie's scientists and clinicians have worked to tackle the complexity of mental illness, and today offer a portfolio of medicines and a pipeline of innovation that spans depression, anxiety, bipolar 1 disorder, and schizophrenia. To learn more about AbbVie's work to support individuals throughout their mental health journey, please visit www.abbvie.com or follow at AbbVie on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, and LinkedIn. And also, this episode of Going There is brought to you by Alkermes. Alkermes is a global biopharmaceutical company developing innovative medicines in the field of neuroscience with products that treat alcohol dependence, opioid dependence, schizophrenia, and bipolar 1 disorder. To learn more, please visit Alkermes' website at www.alkermes.com or follow at Alkermes on Twitter and LinkedIn. And I, of course, want to thank Consequence Podcast Network and Sound Mind Live for including me in this wonderful project. And thanks to Pete Wilson and the Rooks for letting us use their song, I Know. If you are struggling with anxiety, depression, or addiction and are looking for help, please call the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration National Helpline at 1-800-622-4357. If you're thinking about harming yourself and want to seek help, please contact the Suicide and Crisis Lifeline at 988. You may also go to the Sound Mind Live and Consequence websites for more information. So be healthy, be safe, and be kind to yourself and others. See you next time at the Crossroads.
My number one album, big shocker to me, also Folklore.
Whoa.
Are you ready to dive into all things Taylor Swift?
Good for a Weekend is the ultimate podcast for any Swiftie.
With new episodes dropping bi-monthly, as well as bonus episodes to give you real-time reactions to the latest rumors and news, it's your one-stop shop for all things T-Swift.
We also love connecting with our fellow Weekenders, so be sure to connect with us on Instagram, Twitter, and or Discord to share all your Taylor thoughts.
Good for a Weekend is available wherever you get your podcasts.
I know.
Folklore just is that. Like, it's a perfect album.
Hi, this is James Mercer from The Shins.
This is Shirley Manson.
This is Lotte Holst, co-founder of The Cure.
This is Huey Lewis giving you the story behind the song.
The story behind the song is back with an exciting second season. We peel back the layers on music's most iconic hits with legendary artists like The Killers, Heart, The B-52s, Violent Femmes, Jewel, Huey Lewis, Modern English, and more. To keep the music flowing, we'll be sprinkling in classic episodes from our archives between each new one. So check out The Story Behind the Song wherever you get your podcasts.